Hello, ODAC fans, and welcome to the ODAC podcast. My name is JJ Nekloff. I'm the associate commissioner with the Old Dominion Athletic Conference, and as always, joined by the commissioner, Brad Bankston. Brad, how are you doing today?
Great, JJ. Looking forward to hopefully having a couple weeks here where we get a chance to recharge after what was an amazing 2024-25 year, and a great opportunity today to kind of recap maybe our highlighted sport, so to speak, in the spring championship season with ODAC softball.
Yeah, you know, ODAC fans, it is Thursday, June 12th, as we're recording this here. It's been a while since we've joined you on the ODAC podcast, and as Brad alluded to, it's been one of those springs where we have been all over the place, lots of places, lots of championships, lots of awards, and with that comes lots and lots of meetings to make sure that goes off right. So we apologize for not bringing you a podcast in a while here, but you know, some things up here from the spring season really wrap up the year. We've got a pair of interviews here for you today, as we had a chance to talk with the softball coaches at Randolph-Macon and at Virginia Wesleyan. That's Christy Moronsky-Neufelt and Brandon Elliott, respectively, and talk about their experiences in the national championship round at Illinois Wesleyan of the softball tournament. But really want to get into a lot of things that happened here in the ODAC here in the spring and really kind of hit them at the top for you and give us our impressions here. You know, had a good opportunity to see some things here really in the region too. And I'll start with the ODAC newest sport, which is men's volleyball. We had our first champion crowned in that with Randolph-Macon making its first NCAA tournament appearance there. But then we hosted the national championship at Roanoke, and the other outfit that I work with, the Continental Volleyball Conference, was the name sponsor with that, with the City of Salem and Roanoke College. And Southern Virginia University, local team here to the ODAC area, is a CVC team, and they won the national championship, and they went up against Juniata College, which was in the semifinals, which is another CVC team, and what most people or a lot of people are calling from that event the best Division III men's volleyball game they've ever seen. And that went to five sets, if you will. So really an outstanding place in the Kreger Center for that national championship between SVU and Springfield College out of Massachusetts was as loud as I have ever heard the Kreger Center. And it was pretty cool to hear. We've had a lot of good games there. We hosted a lot of championships over the past couple of years now there with the women's basketball championship there previously before COVID, and now here this past year. And I think we've got it again next year, right, Brad? Women's championship there at Roanoke. So that building has been rocking. So yeah, we've got a lot of good things. It's a good first season for men's volleyball, but good seasons for a lot of things here coming in the spring. And Brad, I look at the men's golf world. Can you talk a little bit about what we saw there?
Yeah. Well, you know, you had a team in Washington and Lee that during the year had been ranked number one, and obviously Jonathan McEwen, who was their number one golfer and number one in Division III entering the championship. I was a little disappointed. You had a great championship in Forest Oaks and Greensboro, Lynchburg winning the championship there, and in dramatic fashion, right? You know, they played really well, steady golf over the 3 days, and Washington Lee making a charge on the last day, didn't get in far, get deep enough to be able to take the title. And then, you know, to have only two teams advance to the NCAAs, which, you know, I was a little surprised about that, but super excited and honestly ecstatic to see that they finished in the top 10, which doesn't surprise me. But when you get to Division III golf and you get to the national championship level, you know, once you've made the cut, honestly, they're probably teams that aren't capable of winning it. But, you know, there's seven or eight teams, maybe even nine teams, 10 teams that, you know, on a given 2-3 days are going to play really good golf and have an opportunity to win the national championship. So excited about the fact that we got, you know, I feel like we've probably got one of the best, if not the best, top to bottom leagues in men's golf. And to not have the opportunity to have more than two teams advance the team portion of it, I know that may sound greedy. At the same time, it's probably deserving. And you know, but I was pleased, so pleased that the two that did advance in W&L and Lynchburg had good representation there and finished in fine fashion. Probably not the way they wanted to. And then you got an individual in Eddie Coffin from Lynchburg who wins the individual title. And you know, how cool is that? That hadn't happened in a while for us. And And it's nice to be able to do that. Maybe even going back to, if I'm not mistaken, who was the last person, JJ, you probably know better than I do, that won the individual title? Was it the gentleman, was it a young guy at Virginia Wesleyan?
So we had a couple years in a row that Evan Cox was previous. Yep. I think he was like 2016, but Brian Peacey from W&L.
That's exactly right.
In 2018 range, somewhere in there. But yeah, he was, you know, we've had a couple of those now. So he's the third there in recent times. I think Colin Clark from Guilford was one before that, maybe. So I think we've got four now in the men's golf world. The women's golf.
Clark won it in 2005.
Yeah.
Was at Howie in the Hills, actually, in Florida.
Yep. And then women's golf proving its mettle here coming up. Randolph Macon making its first team appearance in the NCAA tournament. Washington Lee winning the ODAC title again, coming across. And then both those teams didn't make the cut at the Women's Golf Championship this year, but Morgan Massat from Randolph Macon finishes ninth to really have a top 10 showing there. So really outstanding for her. And I'm remiss if I don't go back to men's golf and mention that Jonathan McEwen was the National Player of the Year, winning from the GCAA. And Pete Jessick was the National Coach of the Year, coming from that group as well. So really outstanding things happened in our men's and women's golf room. You know, and then Brad, baseball, you know, we've got two teams making the NCAA tournament, with Lynchburg and Randolph Macon going in after Lynchburg wins the ODAC title. Neither of those teams really getting as deep as they wanted to, and as deep as we think their quality would have indicated here. But still, you know, continuing to show in one of the better conferences in Division III, getting multiple teams in the NCAA tournament, and really the good quality baseball we have here in this league. I'll put any of the teams up against the other ones in the country anytime, regardless of what happened with the results, and just see what happens out there on the field. So really good there. And then we also had some good showings there in both lacrosse worlds.
Yeah, we did. You know, again, our two teams that have kind of perennially been there on the men's side, with Washington and Lee and Lynchburg winning their, you know, I guess it's not next, technically their first round game, their second round game, and then advancing and unfortunately losing in the next round, which is probably uncharacteristic for at least one or both of those two teams in one year or the next. And of course, on the women's side, Washington Lee had kind of been in that top 10 kind of neck of the woods for a good portion of the year. And they advanced to the championship and then lost to a Gettysburg team, if I'm not mistaken, that ended up advancing to the Final Four that, you know, we had the privilege of hosting in Salem with Division II and Division III's championship at Roanoke College in the Salem footprint. Of course, three NESCAC schools made the final, Gettysburg being the one team outside of the NESCAC that advanced on the women's side to the Final Four for women's lacrosse. And they lost in the semifinal, but again, W&L is certainly up against a pretty formidable opponent. And that's a team every year, as you and I both know, that you're going to hear their name from one year to the next in women's lacrosse. Gettysburg has a really strong program, and I suspect, having full confidence in W&L's success, they'll continue to do that. And it's also really nice to kind of see the growth and continued growth that we're having in women's lacrosse in our league with, you know, teams at the top, you know, obviously Shenandoah right there. We also have Roanoke that's traditionally been there, made the tournament in the recent past. And we've got other programs that are on the move and continue to get better. So, again, good showing for us. Probably not what either one of those two sports would want. Their expectation probably is to go a little bit deeper. But, you know, hey, it's rarefied air when you get to that stage and every team's good. And, gosh, you look at the result of the men's lacrosse championship. Tufts just annihilated Dickinson. And obviously Dickinson's in a, you know, you get to that level and you're thinking, you know, that game's going to be a great game. And it turned out it wasn't a great game. But on the other side of the coin, you have Tufts and Middlebury playing on the women's lacrosse championship, and probably one of the best women's lacrosse games I've seen in quite some time, if ever.
Yeah.
Again, Division III's really got a lot of positive things going for it. And then throw in that MPI system and how people are advancing to the tournament. I mean, there's really a lot of uncertainty going forward as to what that's going to look like for us as a league and for other leagues as we move forward and who advances to the championship and has an opportunity to play and what continues to get better and better and better.
Well, and we need to congratulate our men's and women's tennis ranks as well. Men's tennis, Averett University coming across with the ODAC title and then getting into the NCAA tournament. And then winning that that first NCAA match against Asbury before falling to Emory in the second round. So good on the Cougars there for claiming, I think, just the second ODAC title since they joined the league, joining their men's wrestling program from the first season when we had that three-way tie for the regular season title with Washington Lee and Roanoke and Averett. So congratulations to them. On the women's side of tennis, a couple things here. So Washington and Lee continuing its long, long run of dominance in the ODAC, and really it's not just the titles that they're winning, but I think since we changed to the team-oriented format and the standings, having the win-loss records and whatnot, I don't think they have lost a conference match since that started in like 2006-07, that sort of thing. So the dominance is real when it comes to that point. But congratulations to the Generals on another title there and then getting into the NCAA tournament, getting a win over Swarthmore before falling to Emory as well. So the juggernaut at Emory taking down both ODAC teams. But another interesting point here is that Sweetbriar won the ECAC championship beating Baruch. So congratulations to Sweetbriar in the women's tennis world also.
Yeah, no doubt. That's great stuff.
Yep. And an All-American for Lauren Long again at Washington Lee. I say that because I think it's her third straight and she's just a junior. So we'll see what she gets to do for her senior year encore here. But then we've got two sports remaining here. We're going to touch on softball here first before we get to track and field after we have a couple interviews here. But with the softball world, we get Virginia Wesleyan coming away with an ODAC title in what I like to call, and you'll hear this on the podcast too, but the strongest Division III conference in the country. I think I conservatively say top three on the interview, but I'm going to take away my conservativism and go back to my left side here of me and say, yes, the best league in the country. But two teams in Randolph-Macon and Virginia Wesleyan among not just the final eight, but the final four active had to face each other straight off in the pod play and then had to face each other with a if game scenario that Randolph-Macon forced against Virginia Wesleyan, having them not lost yet in Bloomington, Illinois. I think actually that was their first loss of the NCAA tournament because they swept through the regional pod, swept through their super regional, and I don't think they had lost that until Randolph-Macon beat them. And then we saw what happened in the national championship series where Trine took the first two games of the best of three against Virginia Wesleyan. But we had a chance, as I mentioned before, to talk to head coach Brandon Elliott, head coach Christy Moronsky-Neufeldt. So, Brad, let's hear what they had to say in our interview with them earlier today on this Thursday. We're joined by two of our softball head coaches, Randolph-Macon College Christy Moronsky-Neufeldt and Virginia Wesleyan University Brandon Elliott. Coaches, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. How are you?
Doing better. As we kind of talked about a little bit of that, Brad and I got a little bit of a cold right now we're trying to get over, so hopefully we don't sound too nasaled and whatnot coming through that. But, you know, the ODAC had a really good spring, as Brad and I have been talking about on this podcast here, as we're recording this on Thursday, June 12th. And that includes what the two of your programs did at Illinois Wesleyan at Inspiration Field there in Bloomington, Illinois. Both performing very well amongst the final eight team in the country. Brandon, unfortunately, you guys had to go up against Christy and Randolph-Macon and ended up eliminating them from the tournament, but not until after a good fight. And then you went up against a good Trine program and finished runner-up in the country. So really outstanding to both of you there. And we kind of wanted to talk to you about your experiences really with that. And I'm going to start with Christy first. I mean, this was year one for you, Randolph-Macon, coming in, I think, late September maybe is when your start was, and here you are finishing it up as one of the final four teams in the country. Talk a little bit about the overall experience of this season for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was so exciting. It was really cool. And obviously, Brandon, Virginia Wesleyan, they were a crutch this year, but hats off to them because they such a great program and it was tough, but I'm glad we got one at the end there. But yeah, coming in, I think the girls were really excited about just the overall team culture aspect of being focused on. And they really bought into that. And I think at the end of the season, that really came into play, the relationship building and wanting to compete one another and just wanting to live another day. So it was really cool to see that all come together at the end when everything really mattered.
You know, Brandon, Brandon, for you, this is not your first season. I think you and I are on the same ODAC tenure track here as the end of our 19 seasons. You had three titles under your belt. You were going for a fourth one there. Talk a little bit about that experience there at the end against Trine.
Oh, it's humbling, right? I mean, to be on the other side of that piece of it, and got to talk to Coach Macedo when I got home. You know, he's somebody that can certainly understand after, you know, our men's basketball team won the national title in 06. And then, as you guys know, they lost in the finals in 07. So, you know, certainly it humbles you quite a bit. What I told our women was I felt like it was more about what Trine was able to do and less about what we were not able to do. I loved our game plan. I loved the pitch calling. I loved the performance and the fight from our kids. We just got beat by a really good arm and a really good team. And, you know, like I said in the press conference, I didn't want to take anything away from them, right? A kid comes in and a 1-0 ball game, hits a 3-run homer. It's been struggling all weekend. And those are the stories that you love to tell if they're your kids, you know. But, you know, that was tough. But I think it was one of the best softball games that I've been a part of in my career. And add that into the second elimination game with Randolph-Macon. It was also a 3-1 game, which came down to, you know, 2 inches away. And Blaine Talley ties that game, you know, and two phenomenal games. But, you know, again, humbling. And we're just hoping that our kids in due time – can appreciate what they did. You know, I think it was a historic season, and I just kind of told them there's a study. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It was unlike the 1984 Olympians, and they did a study on the happy factor of the medalists, gold, silver, and bronze. And I think JJ and I talked about it the other week, but you know, they said that bronze medalists were inherently more happy than silver medalists because bronze medalists focused on how close they were to not meddling. Silver medalists focused on how close they were to winning gold. And that's just a fear of mine for our kids, right? Is their competitors is don't want them to live the rest of their life being like, we were so close to winning it. And you know, Christie's group and the run they made, you know, we went 2 and out 2 years ago, but I actually felt better going 2 and out coming home than I did losing in the finals. And I just think that's the competitive nature and what that is. And again, you know, hats off to what Christie was able to do and make it. And I think our teams in a weird way playing each other 7 times, think our programs found a way to respect each other and the ODAC even more while we were there. Cause you're in the same hotel and you're going around and, you know, her and I had them and that senior class was super special. I think the only negative side was having to play each other and doing it 7 times, you know, but you know, the other pieces you want ODAC teams, you know, hell, let's get 3 of us there next time.
It'd be awesome. There's no question about that. Christy, you stepped into a amazing situation, right? You know, what a ride. And it helps to have the pitcher of the year on the rubber to be able to do that. Talk a little bit about Gracie and her contributions and just your observation of her in the short period of time that you got to spend with her.
Yeah, you know, she's phenomenal. Like, she's got all the stuff, but outside of it, she's just, her work ethic is really, really good. She went through all 4 years as a nursing major, which you don't hear of quite a bit. And she's succeeded obviously at both really well. So I think that says a lot about the person that she is and, you know, how determined she is to be successful. But yeah, this season was really, really great with her. And I think, you know, I got some good advice from Brandon after we played them and had some good conversation with Gracie about, hey, we're going into the postseason here. And like, how can we elevate your game and how can you be a leader for this team? Because she was such a central factor to our success. And once we hit, you know, the regional at CNU, I think her game is always great, like, but she even elevated it even more. And I think that leadership piece really came into play at the postseason. But to see the run that she made, even just at the World Series and throwing every inning, and it was phenomenal. Like, she was a fighter for sure. And I think that she really helped our team to get that fight mentality at the end of the year. And, you know, such a successful career. I couldn't be more proud and happy for her to end on that note. And just the senior class as well, for them to finally get there and not only get there, but to be successful.
She's been a, just such a pleasure to watch over the years, and amazing stuff. Go from one end of the spectrum, Brandon, to the other, right? Which is Morgan Tucker as a first year kid, resetting the ODAC RBI record, and in JJ's notes to me to make sure that I had everything in line, should have been the National Rookie of the Year in his opinion. So, Brandon, talk a little bit about her contribution to the group, and then kind of, your outlook, because everybody that I talked to was like, oh my God, and it was interesting when we texted before you left to go to Illinois. You're like, hey, I maybe it was a super regional. I just want to take this group there. I want to get this group an opportunity. What's a little bit about Morgan, and then a little bit about the group.
Well, I'm going to make a lot of people mad, but I've never wanted to be quiet. You guys know that. I just think it was a travesty. And I think there's a lot of my colleagues in the game that agree. And not taking it away from the other women that had an opportunity to be the National Freshman of the Year. But, we were fortunate to, aside from Gracie and the ODAC, we were fortunate to get Lacey Campbell, who I think is a third team. And I think that's a great spot for her. I was very surprised that Lauren Bible was recognized, and I especially her journey. She doesn't have the strikeout numbers that a lot of people do, but for her to be a third team All-American was unbelievable. But the best player on the second best team in the country, not only is not an All-American, but was not the National Freshman of the Year. I just thought it was a travesty. One of her biggest things that I pointed out, and I mean, some of that's because she saw Gracie 7,000 times, but whether it was Gracie or it was the young lady from Trine, who's Michonne was unbelievable, and the girls from Christopher Newport, and I mean, she faced it was an outrageous number of at bats against pitchers that were all Americans. She hit 500 against pitchers that were all Americans. I don't think there's another hitter in the country that can say that.
Nope.
And I know it's cliche to say, but Morgan is one of the best humans that I've been around, especially even as a freshman. And when we were in Illinois, she was in the lobby every day. She is a video and a tech junkie, and we were using Synergy, and she knows how to operate Synergy better than any human. I think she needs to work for Synergy, but she's breaking down game film, and she's looking at at bats, and I think she does a really good job of adjusting at bat to at bat, and just the maturation we've seen with her was incredible. And it'll be fun to see her in the lineup next year when we get Allie Pollock back, because Allie will be able to protect her because of the power and things like that that Allie has. But just to see her production and her performance in the World Series was unbelievable. But just going back, like you said, Brad, you asked about that group and getting this group here. We limped into the World Series last year, on an arm and a half, and kind of just, I felt like we were Tiny Tim kind of limping into there for Christmas dinner. And this year, although we had some crazy injuries early and that hurt us, and I mean, three all region kids that weren't in the lineup all year, to get there was spectacular. But this group especially, and I think when you talk about culture, and we've had some really strong teams with some really strong cultures, and it's just hard to kind of say this team was better than that team or whatnot. But the vibe within it, and I said it all year, it wasn't just the kids and how they operated. It wasn't just our staff and how well we get along, but our parents. And I know people give parents such a hard time, but I was the last one out of the dugout when we lost, and every single parent, whether their kid played every inning of every game or their kid didn't play at all this year or the kid was injured, every single parent stopped and hugged and thanked every single member of our coaching staff. And I'm not saying we haven't had years where some of that's happened, but every single parent, every single parent. And I just think that just goes back into the outlook piece and the culture of our program. So to give those kids an opportunity to have some joy through softball, that they earned was spectacular.
I think you're right, Brandon, with all that stuff. It also helps that Morgan's 6'3" and left-handed, so that's a nice little bonus too. Want to switch to kind of an ODAC perspective here from both of you, and it's kind of cool that we've got kind of both sides of the coin here again, with Christy going through your first year with it, Brandon, being involved with it for 19 years in an ancillary as a baseball player when you were there as an undergrad. So you've been around the ODAC for a long time. But you both won 40 games. Christy tying a program record with 42 wins. Brandon, you won 49 games, almost getting to that 50 game mark again, which is equally, or if not more, impressive than going through that. But Talk a little bit about your perspectives on the league too, Christy, starting with you, because, you know, I'm biased in thinking that, you know, I'll be conservative and say it's a top three Division III league in the country, even though what my head is really saying is that we're number one in the country. But still, you know, Christy, your thoughts on coming in this year and then going through it for a year, what you think you see from the ODAC, and Brandon, your continued thoughts on just the progression of the league and where you think we sit.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, one of the pluses to taking this job was I knew that the ODAC had arguably the best conference for softball in the country. So that's something that really caught my eye and I wanted to be a part of. And I think to have two ODAC teams standing in the Final Four, I think it says a lot about, you know, the competition that we're playing day in and day out. And, you know, it didn't matter what team that we were playing this year, everyone came to play. And I think when you get into those conference games, it doesn't matter what a record is or what has been done in the past. Like, it's a dogfight. So I think that really prepped us for postseason this year, is having a lot of those tough, close games and even some losses in there too, which I think overall kind of helped us this year. But yeah, coming in, like, from the outside looking in, I know that the ODAC is viewed really highly. So it was exciting. I really enjoyed it, and I hope and think I've already seen a ton of the coaches out recruiting. I think it's going to continue. That's my hope.
Yep. Brandon, your take on the ODAC's down year.
Yeah, that was embarrassing to say, right? I said it to Christy about 400 times on Southern Illinois, though, and her parents. But, you know, I think when I came into the league, you know, I know Roanoke was coming off its heyday, and Lynchburg and Dawn were rolling, and Donnie Falk and those Bridgewater teams. But the ODAC wasn't getting two teams, right? It was getting, like, whoever won the tournament got in. And it was like, I remember as I came in, I think it was Bridgewater was kind of getting another bid, or Lynchburg and Roanoke were kind of in. And it was the expectation the ODAC was going to get one team. And now, like, we're upset if we don't get three. Or four, and that's the continual progression of what they've done. And, you know, I think you got to tip your cap to Dawn and what she's been doing for the longevity and how great she's been for the league, but also she mentors a lot of us and coaches. And I know I'm kind of one of the old heads now in the league, but I call her Mama Dawn for a reason. But we have a ton of conversations throughout it. And the ODAC's getting younger, and it's looking a lot less like me. And looking more like Christy, right? And you're starting to get a lot of young, you know, aspiring female head coaches to lead, you know, these women, which I think is important. And I think there's a huge place for that in how the sport is progressing. And you're seeing the ODAC do that, going from like a one, maybe two bid league to we're upset the years we don't get three. And some of those years is because we beat each other. But, you know, I mean, Meg's kind of getting solidified there, Bridgewater, and you're seeing Bridgewater continue to climb. You know, I think we lose what Josh is going to do at Ferrum now that they're going to Division II. I think he was doing a phenomenal job, you know, certainly a product coach with me, coach at CNU, but you're starting to see that. And then when ODAC jobs open, which they don't open very often, I mean, with Courtney stepping down to go take care of her family and do those things, I mean, I've probably received five or six texts from coaches like, all right, talk to me about the ODAC, talk to me about here. Is that a job? And so people want to come into this conference. But I think one of the things that's hidden, and you guys work with sports and all across the ODAC, and Brad, you see it obviously all across the country. What I think makes our conference unique, and even talking to some of the coaches in Illinois, and having some national connections to coaches, is relationally, like, we all get along, you know, and certainly want to beat each other's heads in. But when I go to Averett, I'm sitting there and having, you know, pregame conversations about, hey, what are some things that we can do to help? And, you know, what about recruiting over here? And just having personal conversations and really trying to help build the league and do those things. And that's not normal. I wish it was normal. But I think that's what makes it unique is, you know, there's hugs and not handshakes, and there's general conversations about how are you doing. And that just continues to want us to root each other on, is, you know, and I text, there's a team in the World Series that wanted scouting information on Randolph Macon. And I text Christy, because she doesn't know me as well yet, to be like, I just want to let you know, I will not do that ever, right? Ever. I'm not going to give away information on our conference is, unless you're playing us, I want you to win. And I think that's one of the things as we continue to elevate each other. And that's what makes our conference so great.
I don't think I could have said it any better. I think softball is a sport that I've seen that, you know, Brandon, really from the beginning, you used the term Mama Dawn. I would use the term the Little General, I think, is the nickname that I have heard of Dawn over the years. So, you know, that goes a long ways back, right? And it has been a camaraderie. There are heated rivalries. There are, you know, everybody wants to be successful and win. But ultimately, we're not doing it by stepping on top of each other. We're doing it by holding hands as we move forward. And Christy's going to learn that. Now, maybe, you know, that I don't know her previous, you know, relationships that are in the league that she was in. And that's not to say that there aren't other leagues out there that have success with relationships. But it's not just in softball. You know, I look at our men's lacrosse group, right? One of the more competitive groups that we've had nationally over the years, had teams that made it to the national championship game, not haven't won it, unfortunately, right? But have an opportunity to play for it. And to a man in that group, they want to advance the sport and advance the league. And they make decisions in that group that sometimes are contrary to what's the betterment of the teams that are at the top. But they do it in a way to grow the sport and to grow the league. And that happens across the board. That's just one that really stands out to me because, you know, they're as competitive as they come. And there have been some heated rivalries in that group over the years with, you know, thinking about Bill Pilot, who's 37 years in at Roanoke and now retiring as a coach. But Bill's won a lot of games and lost a lot of games in the league. But he was one of the guys that would be the first person in the meeting, regardless of whether he was successful that year or not, that would stay and, hey, how is this making the league better? And I think we as a whole, from the top down, are better working together than we are working against each other. And fortunately, I've had a chance to witness that and have to work with the coaches like you and Christy that hopefully believe that and will continue to apply that as we move forward. No doubt. I'm 100%
with you on that. And I want people to know, I've been looking over here at my other screen here real fast, looking at some notes, that, you know, there's only one other sport that really rivals comes close to rivaling the success of softball here in the conference. I mean, we've had national championship for Lynchburg for baseball a couple of years ago. We had a national champion for golf several times, that sort of thing individually. But from a team perspective, getting in with four teams getting in, or three teams in most years, men's basketball, the only one that comes close to softball, and it's not quite there yet. Men's basketball's had four teams in a couple times. Softball's had four teams in a few times. But you're right, you know, Brandon, when you said that we get upset when we don't have three teams in, it's because majority of the time we're getting three teams in since things have started to kind of turn here across the league. Kind of want to just, you know, finish up on things here a little bit, and it's been a hot topic we've had in coaches' meetings and whatnot, and you guys can both give your opinions on it here. But, you know, as we have been talking about the ODAC and its prevalence on the national stage, the NPI is the discussion, that sort of thing. Your takes on first year going through the NPI and how you think your programs went through it. Christy, I'll let you start.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely interesting for sure. I feel like after the regular season, where we landed in NPI is probably where we should have been. But with that being said, and we've talked about this before, you take a look at some of the higher ranked teams and they've got a lot more wins, but they're not playing as strong of a schedule. So it's like that, because we're going to play good teams in the ODAC. Like, we're going to get that strength of schedule and that preparation. So do I go out there again and schedule some more top 25 teams and potentially, you know, lose those games more than we win and then our NPI goes down? Or do we schedule some teams that we think that we're going to take both games from? And is that going to help our NPI? So I think with the information that we have right now and where the dials are at, I still don't know, like, what is the best method. But, I mean, just at looking from it this year, I think wins are more important than strength of schedule, to be honest.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out, right? And strategically, what I think is starting to happen is you're starting to see that the tier right under the top tier starting to understand that formula and trying to get in and not playing those teams. First year of my career, I'm having a hard time filling my schedule. And that's hard. That's hard because there's so many schools within, a radius.
That's 40 games. No, come on. I mean, that's a lot of games. Don't you agree?
I've never had a problem. Never had a problem. And you know me, if there's 40, I want to play 40. Because I just think that's important for the kids. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting kind of how to see how that shakes out if, strategically there. I think the dials are going to need to be adjusted, but I think as soon as you adjust the dials, somebody's going to say you need to adjust them this way. And I think it's just going to be kind of a moving sliding scale. I just want to see more information on the wins versus losses. I thought, and I agree with Christy, I thought there was a level of, it was worth more to win more than it was to play a tougher schedule. And I've just always been a believer. You want to play the toughest schedule you can. And you got to win some of those games, but I'm going to lose more games when I play better teams. I mean, that's just the way that it works in anything, in sports and war and in testing. I mean, that's just the way that it works. And so I'd like to see it kind of mirror that. And you get rewarded for winning those games a little bit more, but you know, if you're 40 and 10 and you're 40 and two, and you've only played one or two ranked teams, there's no reason you should be ahead of a team that's, 35-7 has played a bunch of ranked teams. And we saw some of that. But the thing that I do like, and I think it was advantageous, is the last year they worked really hard before the NPI to try to split the best teams up, right? And those teams aren't always going to win. And I felt like the NPI forced the hand, and it was a good thing for our sport to split the teams up as best we could within a budget. So those top eight seeds or whatever didn't play each other, right? And you're still going to have some tough regionals. I think Randolph-Macon going to Christopher Newport was a tough regional, but I also agree with Christy is CNU as a one seed, and Randolph-Macon, if you looked at the MPI, was an 8 or 9. So that they were going to have that matchup if you really broke the numbers down somewhere. And then I think if you go down to East Texas Baptist, that regional was pretty tough down there with Belhaven, but those West, there's just not a lot with the flights. So I think you're going to get tied up some years in some regions to have that happen. But what it allowed it to do is play it out. And you could say the best, you're never going to say the best eight teams are going to get to the finals, because you're going to have some upsets. You're going to have some teams not play well. You're going to have some teams that come out of nowhere and roll. You're going to have some teams with some Gracies that just go and carve everybody up, but it gives a better opportunity for the most competitive eight teams to get to the finals. And there were a bunch of dogs there this year, and it was, you could have played really good softball and gone two and out and not had a shot. I mean, that Linfield lineup was ridiculous, to get through. And I do like that because it's giving the best teams, those best 15, 16, 17 teams, all a legit opportunity to go without having to beat them up, right? And I've had to go through Macon, and I've had to go through CNU, and I've had to go through Salisbury, and we've had to do all that. And some of those teams were the top 8-10 teams in the country, and only one of us got to go. I mean, we've played CNU in the super regional, I think, in 7 of my years here. And the years we didn't play CNU, we either played Salisbury or Randolph-Macon, right? Or Lynchburg. So to be able to kind of slip through that a little differently to give us an opportunity to see conference foes at the final site, I think just is certainly advantageous for the sport and for the kids that deserve to get there.
Yeah, no, I think both your comments about this, I think, are very apt, and we'll have to see how it continues to go. I don't know what the solution is yet for helping you filling out your schedules. I mean, maybe Brandon, maybe you can agree that Hannah Hurl can only throw 3 innings and Morgan Tucker's got a bat right-handed, but I don't know if that's a type of thing you're going to have to set up in a contract. But either way, we just want to applaud the work that the two of you did with your programs this year, not to mention the other ones in the ODAC, but being among the final four teams in the country is really outstanding. So congratulations for that. And I want to thank you both for joining us here on short notice here on the ODAC podcast.
Thanks for all what you guys do for the ODAC, for sure.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a great first year, and you guys are awesome.
Well, JJ, again, it's such a pleasure to talk to both of those coaches, reflecting back on what was a year where they played each other 7 times. which is pretty amazing that they even want to get on a podcast and spend more time together. You know, the opposite ends of the spectrum there, right? First year in the league and you know, 19 years in the league. So really cool stuff. I want to thank both of them for spending the amount of time that they did and the wonderful insights that they gave us, not only on softball and their teams and the league in general, but, you know, just why and you why we're unique, why our league's unique when it comes to relationships and how people work together. So real pleasure to talk with them.
You know, and I think, you know, coming as a, I don't know how I can call myself a transplant anymore just because grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. But when I showed up here 19 years ago, I mean, that's one of the first things I noticed is just the camaraderie in the AD room, let alone with the coaches groups and whatnot. And that's certainly continued to grow so that they've been able to strike a balance up and down the ODAC for that camaraderie versus competition and still making sure you're keeping your school in the forefront without cutting off your nose with the rest of the school. So it's been pretty cool to watch, and actually to, you know, be a part of now for the better part of, you know, my adult life going through this. We mentioned one more sport that we had to touch on here. That's outdoor track and field on the men's and women's side. We had, I think the number is 18 All-American plaques that came
across
this.
Good stuff.
Really, really outstanding year. Two national champions, Tor Hotung Davidson in the 1500 meter and Chasen Hunt in the 5K, both from Lynchburg. Really, really outstanding performances. We, you know, we talked about both of these guys before, but Chasen Hunt is, I think, is the one who set the national record for Division III out of the Brian Clay meet in Los Angeles, or in California, I should say, not necessarily Los Angeles, but in that 5K race, he goes and wins a national championship with it too. So really outstanding for him. So All-Americans on both sides, first teamers. I think we had six of those 18 were first team All-Americans. We had a relay out there, which kind of helps out with that stuff. Lynchburg men placed on the point side with those national championships. That certainly helps, you know, drive those points up. And I think they were somewhere in like the seventh range as a team going through that. So really outstanding. It's going to be a changing of the guard, though, for that Lynchburg program with both Jim Sprecher, and now, as we've learned in the last week plus, that Jake Reed is also leaving. So it'll be new leadership there for Lynchburg, but there'll still be talent as there is in the rest of the league. And really excited to see the kind of the progression of some of those other programs here as we get maybe into the cross country, even into the fall. Is, you know, what does a Washington League women's cross country team do as an encore to what they did last year and what they did this year, winning the track and field titles indoor and outdoor this year. So I think looking forward to seeing what we're able to do. And I think that's a sport that, if there's anyone that I can point to that has grown, kind of like softball has grown, is the growth of, at least on an individual perspective, of what we're doing when we get to the NCAA championship and the records that have been broken, has really grown, at least in my time.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, we always have had strong individual performers that have advanced to the track and field championships that have done well. I mean, you know, storied programs, outstanding individuals that have kind of, you know, been there for 4 years and just dominated and done well, won national championships. But the collective kind of good, right, that we're seeing in track and field and the growth of the sport in general, from the league perspective, is probably has never been better, right? And if we continue to kind of see, you know, our institutions, you know, replacing coaches like, you know, Sprecher and Reed with quality coaching groups, which they're doing, and quality coaching staffs, I think we're going to continue to see that growth and the investment in track and field in general, right? Just look at Eastern Mennonite and the efforts that they made to complete the track, you know, that they've built on campus, where we hosted the outdoor track championships, and they were just they were an amazing partner, and just an amazing facility, and looking forward to being able to return back there next year for the ODAC outdoor championships in 2026. But, you know, super stuff and kind of end of the year things, like put everything in a bow for us. Are, you know, the five awards that we give away at the end of the year. It's our Doc Jobson winner, our Marge Berkeley award winner, which are our Scholar Athletes of the Year award winners, and also the Commissioner's Cup. So JJ, why don't you share a little bit about our Scholar Athlete Award winners, and then we'll phase into the Commissioner Cup and talk about a little bit more recognition that we've got going into the 50th anniversary year of the ODAC, which is next year.
Yeah, for the second year in a row, a Shenandoah field hockey star, Mairead McKibben, is the Berkeley Award winner. Last year it was Elise Velasquez, and then 2 years before that, it was Olivia Wynell, who plays for Melissa Smeltzer-Kraft's women's basketball team. So that's three out of the past four Berkeley Award winners have gone to Shenandoah athletes. So congratulations to them and to Mairead in particular for this year's honor. Washington and Lee increased its record number of Jopson Award winners with Hillis Burns, part of the men's lacrosse team there. Really another outstanding key piece to the nationally ranked generals program that helped them to all the success that they had this season and really over his 4 years that he's been there and competing. So pretty outstanding, two great representatives here. They may or may not move on to some future awards here as we go ahead and make those or determine those processes with the ODAC Board of Directors, thinking about the Division III Commissioners Association Awards and the NCAA Woman of the Year in particular, those sort of things. So could see their names a little bit more here coming around. The Commissioners Cup. So Washington and Lee won the overall cup and the women's cup. They won the women's cup with a record rating. I want to say they only dropped like 2.5-3 points all year. It was really, really an impressive run for the Generals women. And then on the men's side, not that the Generals men didn't have a good year, but it's Lynchburg that came away with the men's trophy. So congratulations to the Hornets on collecting that prize, which they have done before. So really a good year. And the other teams that are in the rankings, I think we're showing that those ratings were pretty good across the board. Some teams had some significant increases. Some teams going the other way a little bit. But you know what? That happens every year, and that's cyclical with competition. But really, you know, those highlight really an outstanding season that we had, not just from an ODAC perspective and competition, but I think we hosted, what, 6 national championships this year? Just
we hosted a lot. We host a lot. You're
men's,
right.
Women's swimming, women's basketball at the same time, get to the lacrosse championships coming through, ancillary.
Volleyballs. We had both volleyballs.
Both volleyballs. Right, women. The women's volleyball.
We had women's lacrosse, and that's an exciting time, and it's always great to showcase, I guess, the league and how the league works together. I think back to the women's basketball championship. You know, we had a chair who's now the commissioner of the OAC, who formerly worked in our office, in Bethany Danley. We had people from all over the country that were there to participate in the basketball national championship. And by the way, NYU's women's team was really, really good. I mean, they were super important, impressive to watch. But just to hear people say, hey, it's so cool that your coaches are here, you know, that you as a league are embracing this, even though we didn't have somebody that was in it, you know. And I hats off to you and Stacy in our office for the work that you do around those events to keep them moving, to keep them professional, to make people feel comfortable when they're here. Without that, I don't think the success that Salem has had in hosting those events, it wouldn't be the same, right? It wouldn't be the same. We'd never be able to do it without them, no doubt. We'd never be able to do it without Roanoke College and the contribution that they've made with their facilities now. But they'd never be able to do it without us going back to the day, right? It's been a really good partnership, and we look forward to continuing that into next year. As you said, we'll have men's and women's soccer, we'll have women's basketball, we do not have swimming next year. And we have softball that'll wrap things up in May, which is that week later than we had women's lacrosse this past year. So we'll be finishing up the early part of June. And that's kind of part of the conversation that we've had in the AD's meeting, trying to figure out when our end of the year meeting is going to be, because we're going to be hosting softball right in the middle of the footprint of when we've done that. So it's not convenient timing for us in our normal calendar year. But man, is that a fun tournament to host, and super excited to have it at the Moyer Complex. It's done this, you know, massive renovation. It was such a pleasure to be back there this year with our softball. Those two pods at the beginning of the tournament, just one of the coolest events we host all year, in my opinion. And to have the national championship coming there and being able to play there in our pods next year, it's just it's icing on the cake. It'd be a good way to finish the next academic year for sure.
Yeah, no, it's really pretty awesome. So, but before we get to finish next academic year, we've got to get into it. We've got a couple things that are pretty big here coming up. So next season, the 25-26 season. So if you think about the ODAC started operation in 76-77, that means next year is the 50th operating year of the conference. So congratulations to all those that have been involved in running the league. You know, obviously with Dan Wooldridge getting things, you know, started moving down the road with those original eight charter members that we had here, and then you continuing on the legacy here for your 30 plus years in the conference. So congratulations to all that. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Salem hit 108 championships and you've been around for all of them. Yeah. So,
Thank you. That's two lives. It's a week of tournament. So yeah. it's like two years of your life gone.
There you go, right there. But it's a model we've been able to follow, Stacy and me. So congrats. So thank you for that. But 50 years of the ODAC coming in next year, and we're going to kind of linchpin that with the first ODAC Hall of Fame that'll come across. Maybe there'll be a different name to that. We're still kind of kicking the tires on that one a little bit here, but the first ODAC Hall of Fame class will be 50 individuals, I should say, in size, and it'll range from former student athletes to coaches, administrators, contributors, that sort of thing. There was no voting in this first class that's come across. This is all coming straight from the schools with the people that were looking forward to being a part of that first class and really identifying those. I think we might do 2 years of that as we get through the first couple of years, with the ODAC having the final three people to go into the 47 that'll come straight from the schools. So we'll look forward to highlighting that for you. We'll probably do it in a few different ways. If I remember when we were going through the celebration for the 40th year of the ODAC 10 years ago, looking through some of that stuff, maybe we'll do some different things, talk to some different people, certainly have interviews, certainly have podcasts to come across with that. Maybe even a few video features, if you can bear with seeing our ugly mug show up there on the screen talking with some people. But really, it's a pretty cool celebration, and one that I think that for some people, including me now, because next year will be my 20th year, that there's some nostalgia that'll come into play for a lot of this. I can imagine for you it'll be a lot of it when you see some of the names that are on the final list come through.
Yeah, you know, the cool thing about it has been I've had some open conversations with athletic directors that haven't been in the league very long, right? You know, hey, we're going through this, and their whole department's changed. There's nobody there that knew anything about, you know, their participation 15 years ago. And those there are others in the league that have been around for, you know, 40 years or 35 years, and they have a sense of recognition of knowing and remembering who those pioneers were back in the day, and even who those great student athletes were on their own campus. So that's been fun to say, hey, you know, we're thinking about these people being our honorees. Are we missing somebody? You know, and there've been a couple instances where I was on the phone and I instantly said, oh yeah, you're definitely missing somebody, and this is the person you're missing. And that's been fun, because that really dials me back to the time when I started in the league, which has been a long time. And you mentioned that, but, you know, in the role that you're in, which was seeing and feeling and knowing names and knowing their recognition and their in the impact that they had, because you saw them every week. You saw them every season. You knew that those people were, you know, super impactful. And then you have to remember, we have to figure out a way, and I think we've done this with the committee that's worked through this process, and thanks to Richie Wagner and Phil Stanton for really kind of being the guys carrying the water, right? They've been the ones that have gone to the well, filled the bucket up, and carried the water the entire way. And I wanted it that way, because I wanted that group, the sports information directors, the media relations people, to kind of have the spark and really want to see it finish. Because you need that energy in the membership to do it. We have that with them. We've had that with that group. And, you know, as we got to remember those veterans, and we got to remember the people that were there in the late 70s and early 80s that I don't remember because I wasn't here. And we have to make sure that our institutions are doing a good job. And we'll play that into the selection process as we move forward, making sure that we're recognizing those veteran 25 plus year people that, oftentimes get lost over the time because, those that have been involved retire and leave, and they don't, you have to really work to make sure that you're recognizing those student athletes and past coaches for those, for their contributions. So I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about the rollout. Once we have the members, we've got a good number of the selections already in hand. We're preparing for that over the summer. And then that rollout as we start the academic year, and then how we feature those individuals throughout the rest of the academic year is going to be pretty cool. And I think you're right. I think through written form, through podcasting, through video interviews, and some sort of recognition, we're not going to be able to get all those people together. And unfortunately, some of those people aren't with us anymore. But hopefully we're able to do it the right way and make people know that that we care about their contribution and how valuable they were to the league and the story that the league's told over 50 years, which is, pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think that's the word there. You said the story of, or the phrase, if you will, the story of the league. And that's where Richie Wagner was with a lot of this is, how do you tell the story of the league and how do you tell the story of your school when you have your nominees coming across? So I think that's important for people to know. And then everybody's obviously going to have opinions on who should go in and who should be here and who's getting left out, who's going to be snubbed. And that's not what we're doing here with this, is that there'll be multiple opportunities for some people getting through. There's a lot of people that would deserve recognition for this. So even I'd say through the first decade of us doing this, it's going to be a process. It's going to have a lot of really good ODAC contributors, ODAC stars, ODAC important folks that help bring the league around to what we enjoy today, and what a very different landscape from what it was in 1976 when there was no personal computer anywhere, to now that we're doing this here on Zoom. You're in the office right down the way from me, but this is the best way for us to go ahead and record this audio piece to go ahead and get this taken care of. So doing a lot of different things moving forward. We look forward to bringing you the ODAC Hall of Fame in the 50th operating year of the ODAC in the 25-26 academic year. But we close out 24-25, at least from a podcast perspective, and we continue to work throughout the summer on wrapping things up on the ODAC website and social media platforms. A couple more awards still to come across, and then start preparing for 25-26. For Brad Bankston, my name is JJ Neckloff. We'll be with you next time on the ODAC Podcast.